Welcome back to the FTW Ranch Podcast. We have approached episode number 30, and we feel that this would be a great opportunity to wrap up the very first season of the podcast. I hope that you've enjoyed this, you've laughed, and you've learned, and you felt a part of the FTW experience at a time that you couldn't be here. A big thank you to everyone who was on the show this season and shared their stories, their perspectives, and what hunting has meant to you. But we're not done yet. I've got Doug King to introduce you to today. Doug is a cameraman for Safari Classics, and he films safari all over the world and has so for many, many years, and gets to see the interesting dynamics between the hunters and the guides as a fly on the wall filming. I hope that you enjoyed this discussion, and I hope we get to see him out here again for another Professional Hunter Invitational. If you don't know what that is, once a year, Tim invites professional hunters from all over the world to come to the ranch and see what we're teaching in an effort to close that circle of communication between the instructors and the people actually taking them out in the field. That way, you know when you come to FTW to get safari trained, it's what they're going to want to see. So I thought this was a fun one to close out this season, but don't take our word for it. Do your research. This is just the opinions of the two people talking. Please like, subscribe, don't go anywhere. And thank you for listening.
Cool. Thanks for doing this. Doug King, I've got you on here. This has been a fun week. Yeah. We're at the PH Invitational, the Professional Hunter Invitational. Do we only do this once a year?
I'm actually not sure. I've been invited for the last 3 years, so it's good to finally be here.
Yeah?
Yeah.
This is the first time you've been able to come?
First time I've been able to come.
Nice.
Had prior engagements took up the time, so.
Yeah. I've only been here 6 months, so I don't know if they do this multiple times or if it's only once a year kind of a gig.
I think for the PH thing, it's possibly just once a year.
Okay. How did you get involved with the FTW? How do you know Tim?
Working with Safari Classics, I get to sometimes do some safaris, filming hunting safaris. And I happened to go with Tim and Doug on a safari to Cameroon. And Tim was my client or hunter. And Doug was with another cameraman called Dan.
Were they filming for the show?
Yeah, it was. They were filming for the show.
So there's an episode that y'all have with Tim and Doug in it.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
It is on Tracks Across Africa. What was the other one? I can't remember which one it aired on. Trigicon Sports Field.
It aired on both of those?
I'm not sure which one it was on.
Oh, okay.
We don't get those shows back in Africa. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So do you see much of the things you film then?
I get a link to them, so okay. I can go and watch them, but I don't see which network they aired on.
Okay, so you work for Safari Classics, and you met Tim on a safari.
Yeah, so in 2006 or 7, I started with Safari Classics, filming hunting, their hunting show, Tracks Across Africa, which eventually expanded to 3 other programs. And from then, started working with them for 7 years, and then Zimbabwe had gone through some turmoil, and then I ended up going on my own for a bit. But we left on good terms. There was no issues about that. And then they started looking into the conservation side, how they could expand let's have another drink.
It's been
doing
a long
well.
Day.
Doing well.
It's been a long day, man. I'm a little bit toasted myself. We shot a lot of rounds today. This has been a super fun week, though. Like, we're here, this PH Invitational, it's a rare opportunity for, I think, the two ends of the same rope to kind of get together, you know, or to close the circle, because we have the clients here and we're teaching them these skill sets of how to shoot, how to be good hunters, and then y'all have to deal with them.
100%. Right? I mean, I'm the cameraman usually on these safaris. So one, I don't usually get to pick up a rifle. Mm. And two, I get to see from a different perspective, because I'll have the PH chatting to me and I'll also have the client chatting to me. And sometimes there'll be...
Oh, have you been mediator for the past 8 years?
You can be a mediator in those ways. And I think what you've got to do is you've got to trust your PH. You know, you've got to know that he has the experience, and in my earlier years, I definitely questioned certain choices that they'd made, and certainly a lot of the time been proven wrong. It may not be the way you would think you would want to do it, but certainly it'd be a way that they have done and it's been successful. And hunting is always has its variables, but usually the outcome when I was questioning things, I learned my lesson.
Yeah.
So when you become a mediator, you tend to take the side of the PH because you usually a PH that you know and understand. You'll have a client that's saying, oh, watch this program and they did this and they did that and I think we should be doing that. And I'll say, well, you know, just give it time. He obviously has an idea. He has a plan. There's a reason for doing this. It might not be what you've seen on TV, but obviously this area has a purpose.
Yeah, yeah. It's your own hunt. It's not the hunt you saw on TV.
And a lot of the time it turns out how you expect it. But there's always variables and the PH will adapt to those variables.
Nice. You guys deal with the clients out in the field, but you're in a very special situation because you're not... This is typically a PH invitational, so we're teaching the PHs. We're not really teaching them, but we're showing them the things that we're teaching clients. And then you guys are providing feedback like, hey, this is valid, or hey, have you considered this problem that we're having? We need to figure out a way to solve that, because a lot of these curriculums have come from that dialogue, that exchange.
Oh, 100%. I definitely think that this is a great idea because... You know, I've been filming hunts for so many years. I know visually how it should go. Mm-hmm. And we see so many clients who either can't find the target, you know, or the animal, or they struggle with their rifle and they stuff up and they jam their rifle and things like that. And sometimes you actually roll your eyes at it. Not, you know, the client doesn't see you, but you roll your eyes. And on the PH side, you know, there'll be things that the PH will do and you'll question it in your mind. But when you come to do these theoretical, practical tests, you start realizing how easily things can go wrong, but also gives you an idea how to adapt to it.
Yeah.
And I think for a client to come or a hunter to come, it's a great preparation for example, what I'm more experienced in the African environment. And for a PH, it gets them to understand where a client's coming from and why they can't see an animal, or you know, why they're not comfortable shooting that far or things like that. We just assume that they've been in the environment that we've been doing for so many years. So I think it's a good program to have.
Yeah. It reminds me of the saying when I was working for the government that left hand never talks to right hand.
Yeah.
Right. You can have these two agencies both working in the same place and nobody has any idea what the others are doing.
Yeah.
And this is, I guess, this is the free market. This is a business side of left hand and right hand actually talking.
Yeah.
And coming together and saying, hey, this is, what are the problems that you're seeing in the field? Because we're the ones that are teaching them, and how can we fix them, and how can we come together and do that? And the fact that Tim brings you know, you guys out here and does this, I guess it surprised me, but it shouldn't have surprised me.
Yeah, so I mean, just to refer back to those right-hand and left-hand scenarios, a real-time example was today when we were talking about getting on sticks. And, you know, a PH will assume that someone's used sticks before, and it may be different types of sticks that they've used. Hmm. And the client arrives on camp and gets asked the question, have you used sticks before? And the guy's like, yes, I've used sticks, but it might be a totally different type of stick or style. Maybe just get them on the sticks, get them comfortable with the sticks that you use in that environment. But you sometimes, the PH will be halfway through the safari, and his last three safaris has been a client that's come in the last, you know, several years and is used to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't think to check whether the client's comfortable with those particular sticks or something like that. And that was a good example that sometimes we forget where we're at because we just assume that that person knows what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. That was a cool discussion I think we had on the range, because we were talking about the PHs actually sitting down with each client as they come in and kind of going over the communication expectations.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, well, this is what I'm going to say. This is what I'm going to expect you to do. This is what this means. This is how we set up on sticks. Let's actually practice that so we know what we're doing out there. But like you said, you know, you get a number of clients that are very experienced and you don't have to do it and then you forget to do it.
Yeah. I think, you know, cameraman has a great advantage in having the opportunity to travel with a lot of different PHs who have different styles, different ideas, you know, different ways of hunting. So we get to see all those styles and ways and maybe adapt and merge different styles and ways to hunt those different areas, because we get to go to so many different areas where some PHs are stuck in one area. And I've definitely noticed over the years, I mean, I've been filming professionally hunting safaris since 2006. And there's a very small handful of PHs that have the whole package. Hmm. You know, the communication, the skills, what we call the full package. But
yeah, you're in a very special situation where you kind of get to be a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
Like, you're not invested in the hunt. You're not the hunter, and you're not the PH providing the hunt. You're just an observer.
Yeah.
And so I bet you have seen some things.
Yeah. And like you said earlier, we become the mediator. You know, you'll get disgruntled clients, and to make sure the safari goes well, you're always trying to work with your PH. You know, if you go against your PHs, the safari's not going to go well at all.
Is there more of a connection between you and the PH than you and the client?
On most occasions, probably because most of the hunts you've done a safari with that PH before. The ones that you haven't, it's harder to create that connection between both, because on most occasions it's one hunter and they'll be in the front chatting in the cab. But when there's an observer, they'll sometimes rotate out and you get that full communication going.
Yeah.
The time when it's one hunter and that communication is breaking down is when you're in field on foot tracking something and they're not pleased with how things are going, and then they start trying to talk to you about their concerns and worries.
Yeah. They're testing their complaints against you for a feedback.
Yeah, they're trying to see how you feel about it.
Yeah, if they can get enough people to agree with them, then they must be right, and then maybe they'll confront the PH.
Yeah, and
right?
And sometimes it's understandable. I mean, sometimes you'll be on tracks for, you know, 4 or 5 hours, and it seems as though the trackers have lost the tracks, and sometimes on occasion they do, but surprisingly, the trackers are amazing. They just somehow manage to stay on tracks in most occasions. Mm. And that doubt starts kicking in after 4 or 5 hours. You know, you've been walking for 4 or 5 hours, and you start questioning whether this is worth, or if we're even on a fresh track. And that's when I've, in my past, in my earlier years, definitely would question things, and suddenly down the road, you know, 20 minutes later, we...
You and the client back there, like, what the?
Yeah. What are, you know, 20 minutes later, we're getting on sticks and pulling a trigger on the animal we've been following, you know.
Wow, wow.
So... Yeah, I've definitely learned to have the patience and definitely back the PH, because, you know, they know what they're doing, obviously, but there's always variables in hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just trust that they're going to figure out if something doesn't work out, they're going to make a plan to make it work out.
Yeah. So is there a lot of continuity between the PHs? Like, you're working with guys in countries all over Africa, right? Do you see a lot of differences? Is it just personality differences or complete differences in service?
There's definitely differences. You know, I'm trying to be diplomatic here. You know, Zimbabwean PHs, I feel, have the better packages, probably because the amount of years that they have to put in, the hours that they have to put in to become a PH. You can't just do a few days and then become a PH. You've got to spend some years.
So there's a different standard then?
There's definitely a different standard, as opposed to a few of the other countries. In some countries, you can just buy your license or do a license in 10 days, or I'm not sure what the programs are in certain countries. But it's known around Africa that Zimbabwe has the standard. So I've had the opportunity to do a lot more hunts with Zimbabwean PHs, and not just in Zimbabwe, but a lot up in Eastern Africa and there's definitely that obvious, you know, difference.
Is that where you prefer to go?
You know, if I'm with a Zim PH, I don't, even if I haven't hunted with them before, I already can trust them.
Wow.
I might have had one questionable PH, but generally my confidence is already in them. I'm not worried about charging animal. You know, you never know what's going to happen, but I'm confident that they generally can handle it. I've had a few questionable issues with a few other PHs from different countries, and I don't want to,
sure,
you know, be negative towards them, but there's certainly there's definitely a different standard there.
So having seen what everybody's doing all over the place, what was your take on, I mean, you guys are only here for 2 days. I didn't realize it was only two. When I came in, I thought I was here for four, but I guess I should look at the calendar better.
I was hoping it was four.
Yeah, I thought that it was, because I had this whole thing in my head for a 4 day, but
yeah, if I didn't have to get back, I'd be extending. Tim would be stuffed. I'd be blowing all his rounds away.
Did you have a good time?
Oh, I loved it. It wasn't awesome. I'm definitely going to have to make a plan to try and come back.
Yeah, good. I hope that you do. What was your professional thought about this week? What sort of things, let's start with, do you feel went right?
You know, you come here with this idea that you're going to just nail it.
And this was your first time here.
This was my first time, yeah. And it's certainly an eye-opener, because it's not as easy as it looks.
Yeah.
Especially when, and the slogan I think is great that FTW have is, it's a way.
Yeah.
Initially, I was not comfortable with the way, but just because I'm very comfortable in a different way. But I could see the pros to them. There might be a couple of things that I would probably revert back to my old ways,
mm-hmm.
Just because it's not a necessity in what I'm doing. But I can see that everything that's been brought forward isn't just because it's someone's idea. It's they've looked at what are the variables and what are the best ways to do this, and said, okay, well, this is what we think is the best way for this situation. It may not seem comfortable, but that's just like anything when you start anew. It's like driving a shift stick. You know, you get in the car and everything's just absolutely confusing. And once you get used to it, it becomes second nature. And I think that's the situation, is if you practice it enough, it becomes second nature. I noticed a good example is chambering a second round. I would normally just drop the rifle slightly and chamber around. And towards then, I started getting the knack of holding that up and chambering on the shoulder, which actually was faster.
Yeah.
It didn't feel comfortable initially. So yeah, it's definitely a way.
Yeah, yeah. We definitely go over a lot of ways,
yeah.
Right? We learn a lot, especially bringing you guys in, because y'all are from all over the world.
Yeah.
I think Sweden, Finland, New Zealand, you said Zambia?
Zambia, Zimbabwe.
Zambia, Zimbabwe. It's a massive group of a lot of different people, right?
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of just hunting different animals.
Yeah, no, it's... I think it's a good thing that what Tim's doing, bringing in so many people from different areas. And, you know, if I was an operator, I'd definitely try and find a way to get some of my PHs, especially my top PHs, to come and take this course, take the advantage of it. Yeah. I can see how it's not just trying to teach them how to shoot better. I think that's relevant. A lot of them are comfortable in the way they shoot, and they shoot very well.
Yeah.
It may not look right or be the right way to get the best shot there, but they're so natural to it now. They'll still shoot well.
Yeah.
But it's also learning the other side. You know, when the hunter's coming, they're a little bit more open-minded on the scenarios.
Yeah, it'd be great if there was some effort made on the outfitters. Yeah, if the outfitters were financially backing this connection as well. Because I think at this point, Tim does this free.
Yeah.
Right? He offers it just to come here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and y'all are able to attend the 2-day course just to make the connection, because he sees enough value in that. If the outfitters were to become proactive with that and then push their PHs, that connection would get much stronger, right?
Oh, definitely.
And so you'd have the feedback of, you know, maybe 50% of the PHs coming through this school and giving us, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm seeing out here. These are problems that we're having. This is how we solve them out in the field. It'd be great if you could teach them that stuff here so I don't have to.
Yeah, right? Definitely. I mean, I can see why Tim does it, you know, even if it's out of pocket, is that once you've been here, you definitely will advocate it. It's not like you'll walk away and go, nah, I'm out. There might be some negatives that you'll see, but majority of it will be a positive outcome.
Yeah.
And you'll definitely advocate for FTW, to, you know, anyone, you know, who's looking at something like this or how they can do better, you'll definitely pass it on.
He's confident in what we're teaching out here, and he knows that, you know, people come through and see the value.
Well, I'm hooked. I got to try and figure out how to get back here. I'm just going to have to.
You have to,
sweet
man.
Talk Tim again.
You should. You really should. Bring a PH with you.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. Save a PH Foundation or whatever. Was there anything that you felt we could do better or that you feel like should be included that wasn't?
Cool.
And I can edit this out. You'd be an asshole.
I've got to think about this. There was something that came up in my mind and I'd totally forgotten. I think what I've got to remember is that this was over a 2-day period, which is normally a 4-day period.
For sure.
And trying to adapt to these new ways in the time frame that we were put under was a lot harder. Mm. And certainly there was some, I wouldn't say frustrations, but maybe got a little flustered on some of the scenarios. But I can understand if it's a 4-day period and you're putting that many hours into that scenario, you're going to get used to it more. But I didn't have the time to adapt. When I started feeling like I was getting into it, we were running out of time and we had to move on to the next thing. So I wouldn't say that something we had to focus on. It's something that is probably part of the full program. So
yeah. I think the intent with this is a little bit more about exposure.
Yeah.
He's probably not coming into this with the intent to teach you how to shoot. It's mostly these are the things that we're teaching. It was a fire hose of everything kind of safari and precision in 2 days.
Yeah, definitely. Doug and Tim need to figure out how they can make a pad for the chest area, because I definitely found as soon as I got that bag under my chest, I was like 100 times more stable.
Really?
As soon as I got that bag in the right spot, I was comfortable.
You weren't resting on your elbows as much?
I wasn't putting as much pressure on my elbows. Look, the elbows were locking me onto the bag, but yeah. It wasn't trying to hold it steady. It was steady already.
Hmm.
It was just about focusing on my breathing, making sure that I was on the point, and it was an up and down motion. There was no left and right. So
interesting.
That could be something that could get, because the glove is a good idea.
Yeah.
But like, I really struggled that first day trying to get that glove up, trying to find something that was the right size and everything.
Yeah. That's a common problem.
With the bag, it because it was a sloped bag, so it had a higher side and a lower side, I could slowly tuck it in further and further until it was in the right spot.
Yeah.
And then I was definitely
just having a backpack with a jacket in it, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one that tapers down so you can adjust the height. Mm. But also then we got to figure out a way to make sure I come back onto the right target.
Oh. Yeah. Managing that recoil is a pain, isn't it?
Well, you know, I think if I'd spotted it initially, like, okay, there's also a target there.
Mm-hmm.
When I came back, I would have recognized, okay, that's the other target. But I didn't see that target.
That happens every week.
When I came back down, I was confused. I was like, man, I thought that red thing was smaller. But there's only one, maybe I blew the other one away. And after I shot, I suddenly noticed the goat in the corner. I was like, oh, shit.
That happens all the time. It happens every week, for sure. Was there anything that you learned? Was it the scope theory?
I learned a lot on the scope theory. I mean, I've heard guys talking, when they start talking mathematics and trajectories and all that sort of stuff, my mind just turns off. It's never been something I've been interested in. You know, I'd rather flick on a camera and figure out how to make that thing work.
Yeah.
So learning it was definitely something I enjoyed learning. When we started getting into the wind things, I started getting thrown a little bit.
Yeah.
But once you got out into the field, it started to make sense. Especially if you just follow that card. I'm not saying I'm fluent in it, but definitely enough to get me on target.
So when you're out there in the field, you're not only just a fly on the wall, but everyone else has a gun, but you've only got a camera, right? And so what is it like to have an elephant charging when all you have is a camera in your hands?
You know, when I first started, the problem with using a camera is when you're looking through a lens or a screen or whatever, you kind of get into this surreal moment where you don't feel like you're there. You're just watching the event like you're watching it on TV. You know you're there, but it doesn't feel as real life as you would think it would. So in some ways, it's kind of dangerous because you're watching this animal coming at you on the screen, and yes, you know you've got to move and everything. You'll see a lot of the shots, the camera guy is trying to get out the way and stuff, but he's not reacting how he would if he was just an observer. He would have a much better plan if he was an observer, but he knows he has to keep on the animal. There's been obviously occasions where that camera looks like it's just sky ground. But
is there much like pride or bravado in being the guy that stood his ground and got the shot?
this is what I used to stand by is when filming a hunt, especially when you're following up on a wounded animal, you never want an animal to charge or come out of the bush or anything like that wounded. You want to find it dead. But if it does, you want to be the one to capture it on camera and as stable, as steady as possible. And, you know, in some ways, that's kind of what you're there for. Not saying that you want the person to wound the animal, but if you're following up with them, that's partly the reason.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely in my earlier years, that was my motto, let's say. When you start settling down and having kids, there's a few more variables that you've got to adjust for. So it's a little harder. I don't put myself in situations as much as I would normally, but certainly if I'm in the environment, I try and do my best to try and get that shot. So you pride yourself on getting it.
What are some of the best shots that you feel you've got?
I think if technology had advanced a few years quicker, it would have been much better footage, but I had two hunts back to back. We had a buffalo charge on the first hunt, and then 10 days later we had another buffalo charge. It was early season, so it was very, very thick. And the first scenario, we were going so slowly, the tracker was having to stop and part the grass to see if he was still in the track. And we were maybe moving 10 meters every half a minute. That's how slow we were going. And we stopped. He started parting the grass, and I looked to my right, and there was a buffalo maybe 20 yards from us, if that, under a bush in the thick darkness of the bush. And so I hissed at the PH and sort of thumbed to my right. So he knew that there was something there, and where he was from, he couldn't see. So the client said, I can see a nose. And that's all we could really see. So I started zooming in to get him, because if he was going to shoot him, he was going to have to brain shoot him. It was just going to drop. So I just wanted to get the head disappearing. As I was going in, he fired the shot. So the focus, there was a bit of chaos because it started coming out. I could see it. I opened my eyes, zoomed out, and he fired the second shot. Fortunately, he was using a double, which turned it right in front of us, literally, you know, a meter from us.
Wow. It ran right a meter from you?
Yeah. It ran of the Game Scout, the Ranger. It was his first safari, so that certainly got his attention.
Was it his last?
No. He was actually smiling. He was, fortunately, it was an old boy, so his horns were worn, so he didn't get too
much. Was he just trying to get away, or was he trying to charge you guys?
You know, to add to that story, it was very interesting that it was his first safari. We had been hunting for about 7 days already, and a lot of the area was so wet we couldn't drive anywhere, so it was a lot of walking. I think on the GPS, this is not including ups and downs on the hills, we had done about 250 kilometers already in the 7 days.
Walking. Wow.
And when he got hit so hard, his fake leg got kicked off. We didn't know he had a fake leg until that happened. He had a wooden leg. Yeah.
The hunter?
The scout. The ranger. The game ranger, yeah. He had a wooden leg. We didn't know he had a wooden leg. So he did well.
Wow.
So we followed up that buffalo, and you've heard of those buffalo that go, circle around and hide behind a bush and get you on the way past.
No, I didn't know they do that.
Yeah, so they'll like in the military, if you feel like you're being tracked, circle around and watch who comes along your trail, your tracks. And we were working our way down to this little stream. It was very green, long grass. And as the PH stepped into this little stream, this bush just boiled next to us on the left. And he shot from the hip, and the client shot from above with the 470 and dropped it, but it didn't really get a chance to get momentum. But when we looked at the tracks, it had circled around, done about a 20-meter diameter circle around through, and then tucked itself under this little bush that you wouldn't think there would be a buffalo.
It's kind of amazing that animal would think to do that.
Yeah. So we dropped that, finished that safari, started the next safari. We're walking, following a buffalo herd. And we had seen a lioness across the stream from us, who was obviously, this herd had been bumped by this pride that were hunting buffalo as well. And we were walking through the bush. The next moment we heard a sound from the right. I just hit record on the camera, and it broke brush, and the PH had to blow it. Or should I say, the PH had to take a shot while he was backing up. Came through past us. I don't know how it didn't hit the client, who went into a gap that he thought he was out the way, and it went through that gap and carried on. And that shot is still used today to show Dangerous Game.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's on the FTW show.
Oh, I've probably seen it then. Yeah. Wow. Is hunting buffalo usually pretty dangerous?
Mostly when they're wounded. Seldom do you have an unprovoked situation like that last one.
Yeah.
It hadn't been shot. I think it was just frustrated with the lions, and I think it thought we were lions coming through, so it came, it decided. It was a younger buffalo. Mm. But yeah, buffalo are the ones that you mostly deal with. Then you have elephant scenarios, a lot harder to stop. So your shots are probably more important. Not that a buffalo isn't hard to start. I mean, you can hit a buffalo several times. If you don't hit in the brain, once that adrenaline's up, it's going to keep coming. And then you have your cats. And I always say if you have a wounded cat and it's charging, when it's initially charging, I want it to be a lion, because usually you'll hear it before you see it, and it's a bigger target to shoot.
So the lions kind of give themselves away when they...
They tend to give them, from my experience. I mean, there might be a few other scenarios where they haven't, but they tend to give a growl and whatnot before they come, and they're obviously a bigger animal to see.
Is there another cat that doesn't do that?
Then there's the leopard. So if it's charging, you want it to be a lion, but once it's on you, you want it to be a leopard, because there's more chance of survival. It's going to scratch and tear you up badly, and maybe there's a chance of death, but... When it's on top of you, there's more chance you're going to survive a leopard attack than a lion. A lion's got a much bigger crushing power and less chance of...
Is there a different intention? Do you think the leopard's just there to kind of maul you and tell you to go away, and the lions just like to kill things, or...
I'm sure this could be a debate amongst people that could go on forever, but from my experience, I think they're there to mostly just maim you and get out.
Mm-hmm.
Seldom I think they're there to really kill you, unless you've been bumping them and shooting at them often, and they now realize they're cornered.
Yeah.
And it's you or them, you know. But if they don't feel like they're quite cornered yet, they're definitely going to jump and go. I heard a story a few years back. I actually don't know the scenario or the person, but one person did get injured in it, and it was the cameraman. And they'd walked through past this cat with their lights on, it was dark, and the cat jumped on him and bit his ass and ran off. And that was the only injury from that scenario.
Damn.
I think a lion is if once on you, it's critical. Someone has to resolve that issue before it goes too far. But with a leopard, you've got more chance of survival.
A friend of mine sent me a video today on Instagram, and it was of a male lion. He runs over and he jumps on this cheetah and just like holds its head down and bites the back of his neck and just sits up and almost like looks at the camera with this cheetah's head in his mouth.
Yeah.
It was, I'll show it to you right now. Hell, it was absolutely savage. Isn't that just the most savage, violent thing you've ever seen?
Yeah, look, I mean, cheetah...
That's a terrifying animal.
Cheetah are the weakest, I feel, are the weakest cat of the family. You know, you look at their paw print, it's more like a dog paw print than a cat paw print. It's the only cat that doesn't retract its claws, yeah.
Mm.
The only difference is the pad at the back where there's three dimples. Whereas a dog only has two dimples. And that's why it's still classed as a cat. Although it does look like a cat, I guess.
It does look more like a cat than a dog.
Yeah. Capturing a charge or something is always a great moment, because...
Have you been charged by a lion?
Lion, no. I mean, fortunate not to have a lion. Some mock charges.
What would a mock charge be?
Generally, when a lion hasn't been wounded, it's usually a mock charge when it comes. It'll find a point where it's going to stop and sort of blow up dust and stuff like that, but you never guarantee.
At what distance?
It's close enough that you want to pull the trigger.
Yeah.
So at the same time, most PHs won't want to pull a trigger on a cat that they're not hunting, so they'll try and hold off as long as possible. The good thing with especially like a lion and a leopard, it's a soft skin animal where a good shot, and I mean a good shot, will put it down straight away. There's no question about it. As long as it's a good shot. So a pH will hold off as long as possible. A good pH will hold off as long as possible, but make sure of the shot. And a lot of people say, well, I wouldn't wait. I'll make sure I get a second shot if I don't get him on the first shot. But that first shot might be too far with the way he's moving. But then a lot of people argue, but there's also that chance if you don't get your first close shot, you don't have another opportunity. Mm. In most cases, it's a mock charge, from my experience. Yeah, a lot of people, you know, well, there's a big debate on that, I guess. But, you know, the theory is get down on your knees so you're same level so the bullet's traveling the same height as the animal. Don't shoot from above. I'm sure you've seen videos where that lion runs through them. There's about three shooters and they all miss. They're all standing above, so they're shooting past it. Because they come at a high pace. I mean, these moving targets that we're shooting at is probably a lot slower than what a buffalo would normally come at.
So y'all recommend getting down on your knees so you can't shoot at an upward angle toward the cat and miss. You just have to get on a horizontal plane with him and then line up your sights and shoot. You'll just go through him.
Yeah, wherever. From what I've learned from a lot of PHs is that you get on the same plane. So you're not trying to adjust for the pace of the animal. You're just adjusting for the height and the direction.
That's interesting.
You know, with a leopard, a lot of people don't do it because a leopard moves a lot quicker than, I don't know if it's a lot quicker than a lion. It just seems a lot quicker because it's a smaller cat. So to get down to that level, one, you've got to get a lot lower. So you may not get to that level, but you're definitely decreasing that opportunity of missing. Mm. But once again, it is a soft skin animal. So a lot of PHs go in with a shotgun or something like that. So there's a bit more spray, which would slow the cat a lot quicker.
What are some other things that you've filmed?
Huh.
What about some bloopers? I know you've got some of those.
I tell you what, I always threaten, I'm not a great writer, but I always threaten to write a book.
You should. If it sucks, just don't sell it to anybody.
The title,
just write one.
The title was going to be, Don't Ask Me, I'm Just the Cameraman.
Dude, that is genius.
Because I have so many clients saying to me, oh, you know, like we were talking about earlier, you know, don't you think we should be doing this? Or what do you think of this? Or, you know.
Don't ask me, I'm just the
cameraman. Don't ask me, I'm just the cameraman.
That's genius. You have to write this
but
book.
But it wasn't going to be a serious book. It was going to be more like short stories for the toilet. You know, you put in the
coffee WC table book. Yeah. That's fine, dude. That would be
but
great.
But now it's also trying to remember all those stories that have happened. And
let's hear one.
Oh, it's not really a blooper, but something that came to mind when you mentioned that was we were hunting impala for bait for leopard, and we got the guy on the sticks. We were maybe 60 yards at most, and there was a rock hill behind us. Not a big one, but fair size. And the impalas were sort of in the brush just at the base of the hill. And we took the shot, and it was maybe 2 seconds or so, 3 seconds, that everyone sort of got up, started getting ready, because the impala just dropped. Started picking up the stick, started walking forward, and suddenly we heard like a spinning zoop. And from where the tracker had picked up the sticks, right behind him, the bullet landed. Well, a bullet landed, should we say.
Yeah.
And he went to pick it up, and it was still hot as hell.
Wow.
And it was literally almost in the center of the triangle where the sticks were laid. So pretty much where the bullet left, it landed again. And we were all confused. And so when we got up to the impala, we saw that it had gone through the both shoulders, hit a flat rock that was slightly angled up, hit that deflected, hit another rock that was almost 90 degrees, and it must have come up. And it took about 6 seconds to return back to its original departure, which was quite interesting.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That reminds me of some of the YouTube videos that I've seen where people have shot stupid things. There's this one, this fat dude, I think he's shooting a 50 cal. And I don't remember what he was shooting it at. It was like a piece of steel or something, but it wasn't too far away. But he shot it, he hit it, and then you see the bullet skip back off the ground and then knock the headphones.
I've seen that.
His head. Talk about a close call.
Yeah, that was lucky.
That's incredible.
That would have done some damage.
Oh my God.
But
yeah, for that bullet to go through that animal, hit rock, come right back and land it between the tripod. That's crazy.
Yeah. Talking about bloopers again. There's so many, but I'm trying to think which ones wouldn't necessarily bring attention to certain people.
They don't have to use names.
No. But some of the stories are...
They'll know. It's okay if they know.
That reminds me of a joke I'll have to tell you afterwards. I don't know why I know so many of those type of jokes. It's all from the campfire. But when I was telling Doug about earlier, yeah, we've been doing all this training about making sure you're on the right animal, you know, keeping an eye on the animal and things like that, which I think is very important because I don't know how many times I've seen that scenario.
Yeah.
And we were hunting buffalo and a client shot a buffalo and it took off to the left and there were some bushes in between. So they were leading to try and hit it again and a shot got off between some bushes. It disappeared behind a big jess bush, but they were still leading in case there was still, you know, movement through, and it was perfect timing. The lead was perfect. Buffalo appeared again, dropped it, or hit it, and it literally just dropped, and we were all high-fiving. You know, it was an exciting hunt and great shooting on a moving animal. And we walked up on it, and as we got to it, we passed the level of the bush that was behind initially, and we looked to our right and there was another buffalo dead. And what had happened was the buffalo that we were shooting was running. He got the shot off in a second shot, killed it perfectly. It perfectly fell behind the bush, which flushed another buffalo out and shot it. And
you thought it was the same buffalo?
Well, we put them next to each other for the trophy talk and the photos, and they looked like twins.
Wow.
Same size bar, same look, same style, everything. You know, the only thing that you don't think about at that stage, because the timing was perfect, that probably should have looked for a blood patch. But it wasn't that thick that you would think that there would be something there. So
shot one into a bush and it chased another one out, and you thought it was the same one.
Yeah.
Two for the price of two, huh?
Yeah, it was literally like when I say a bush, it was like a round hedge type
thing.
Yeah,
yeah. I bet you see all kinds of funny stuff like that.
Yeah, we Safari Classics has a... We could have a few...
You should put a bloopers reel together.
Yeah, we've talked about it, but, you know, at the same time, you've got to keep the trust of your clientele,
clients, yeah.
You know.
I guess if you go clowning on clients, they might have trouble finding some.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, if you started doing that and you pulled up some and sent an email off to clients saying, look, we've got this blooper, we'd love to use it, you know, on one of our...
I'm sure most wouldn't care.
You would find enough that you could create something.
I'd be honored to be in your blooper reel.
Yeah, and it would bring some humor to, you know.
It would.
Make people realize that everyone's human and everyone steps up, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's funny. Is there a lot of, like, tension or competition in the safari community or between the hunters?
You know, I'm sure there is. I try to avoid that sort of stuff. Yeah. I'm almost certain there is. But a lot of people... try and respect each other. You just have that small handful. Mm. I think I can't talk on a personal level. I wouldn't know. It's not something I get into.
What are some of the outfits that have been your favorite to work with? If you were to give a hunter a recommendation as far as, you know, I don't know, services provided.
This could get me in trouble because I might not mention someone that probably is due the credit.
Oh, there's that many. There's not just like one.
I
like,
might just it bam. Just might it might be a memory lapse rather than that many. I think, especially after a few drinks, it's probably not the best question to be asking.
You don't have to answer it.
No, look, I think there's some great outfitters in Tanzania, and there should be. You know, for the price you pay to go to Tanzania.
Yeah.
I think there's some amazing outfitters. I think Zimbabwe has definitely stepped up in that category. Botswana used to have some amazing outfitters. I don't know since they've opened up again what it's like now, but I haven't had the fortune of going to Zambia, so I can't comment on Zambia. Maybe I get to do that in the near future.
If you were to ever, so you've been on 1,000 safaris. I don't know, maybe you wouldn't, but if you were to go on a safari, what would you want to hunt?
So I've got my bucket list. I'm not big into trophies. I enjoy hunting, but I'm not big into trophies. I used to do a lot of bow hunting. Bow hunting was more my thing. It was more, for me, it's the adventure of outsmarting the animal, getting up close, getting that opportunity.
Whole nother deal.
And, you know, there'll be that argument, but you wound a lot more with a bow hunt. And I definitely, in my youth, I had that. I might have abused that privilege of hunting with a bow, but I also definitely learned my lessons. My father taught me a lesson, hunting a sable that he gave me for my 21st. But through that, I learned that the adventure and the whole enjoyment of it was stalking the animal. Getting the shot was the cherry on the top, let's say. I would do 10, 15 stalks and not get a shot off, but maybe get a draw on the animal, but wasn't comfortable with the shot. And every now and then you get that urge that you want to put an animal down, but it was never a trophy animal. It was more for the meat, for me. But my bucket list is a Cape buffalo with a bow and a elk. I want that.
With a bow as well?
Yeah, with a bow.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just those two animals that seem to draw me to it.
I feel drawn to the elk too.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's like, it's kind of a majestic animal.
It is. And you know, I've seen elk in the distance in real life. I mean, I've seen a lot of videos and stuff, but I've seen one in the distance, but it's still something that I really want
to
do.
To be in a tree stand and to have an elk, say like 10 meters, this massive bull trot in at an early dewy covered morning.
Yeah.
And bugle, is that what they do? They do that bugle and see the steam come out. That would, I don't even know if I'd shoot the animal. I just enjoy the moment.
Well, exactly. I mean, I would like to try and call one in.
Yeah.
I want that opportunity to be able to call one in. Or whether someone calls it in for me, but that way is the way I'd like to hunt it, not necessarily in a tree stand. But if I don't get a shot in it, but I get that experience, that'll be enough for me. It doesn't even have to be a high score. It just has to be a nice representative.
Absolutely.
As well as the buffalo. It just has to be a nice experience and a good representative.
And I say that, but I'd also really love like an elk skin over my bed.
Yeah.
Like I guess I would have to shoot it.
Yeah, I mean, the look of it might be good, but the feel, I don't think is something that you want. I think it's going to be a little prickly, but I might be wrong. I've never felt one.
I would do fur up, or hair up, whatever it's called. And then like maybe a fleece lining under the leather or something. Like make a bed comfort out of it. I feel like the weight and the thickness, I don't know, if I had a cabin or something in Montana and it was -17, like pull that elk blanket over me.
Well, definitely let me know. I mean, all I can envision is being itchy, but I might be wrong.
Put Jeremiah Johnson on TV and just sit there and imagine what I was like in 1860.
Yeah.
That's the vibe I get from elk. I don't know. I feel that way.
Yeah, I think if I did, it would be more of I don't know what you call it, that seat at the end of the bed.
Mm, yeah.
You know, maybe the cushion.
Like the chest cover or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any plans to hunt?
I would love to, but you know, you always have priorities when you have family. So
work
and finances.
And is it ever seem harder to work in the hobby of hunting when your work is hunting?
Well, I look at photography, you know, film and photography, which is more what I do.
Uh-huh.
I hardly ever take the time for the stuff I do, even though I want to. Because when I do have that time, it's the time that I want to put with the family and things like that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But if the opportunity arose, I could take 5 days to myself and just get in a vehicle and spend hours in the bush, you know, taking photos and stuff and not hear from anyone. But, you know, you can't do that, you know, when you're trying to provide.
Yeah. They kind of rein in that sense of adventure, don't they?
Yeah, look, there, I mean, but... I love having the kids, and my wife, she's very supportive in what I do, you know. They understand why I have to travel, they understand why I do it, and understand that it provides. So, yeah, I've got to give them the dues there, you know. Yeah. It doesn't make it easy leaving them either.
Yeah, it makes it hard for them, because my wife's dealt with that since we got married.
Yeah.
I was a fireman when we got married originally, and right after we got married, I started contracting. And so there began the deployments.
Yeah.
I think I did more than 20.
Yeah.
And now I work here, and it's a 4-hour drive, and I'm here for a week at a time. And so it's, you know, how long do you normally shoot these hunts? How long are you normally gone for?
So when I first started out, to refer back to family, when I first started, I was doing 200 plus days, 250, 260 days.
A year.
A year.
Wow.
And in some scenarios, especially in the earlier years, it was 3 months away, and then 2 weeks back, and then off again.
Wow.
It wasn't intentional. When we first got together, I'd said to the office, fill me up, you know.
And then totally.
2 weeks later, I was dating my current wife now, and, you know, it kind of progressed from there. So I started trying to space the days out a bit more. But in general, you're either doing a 21-day safari, a 16-day, 14-day, or 10-day safari on most occasions. So those are normally your days, but sometimes you'll have a back-to-back. So you might have a two 14-days back-to-back or 21 and a 14-day back-to-back.
Wow. Yeah.
That's
a long time.
Yeah, it is a long time.
Do you have any contact while you're out there? Do you have cell phone reception?
In the earlier years, there were some areas that just had absolutely no contact. And I always used to tell my wife, no news is good news. If you don't hear from me, it's good news. If you get a call and it's not me calling, it's generally there's something wrong, which fortunately has never happened. But the pros about how technology has advanced, there is opportunity now in a lot of the areas to have signal, you know, cell phone signal or mobile signal. Which I think is a double-edged sword, because you have that communication which you're happy about, but at times being on a safari you're quite busy and sometimes you get in late and you don't have the time, or you know, you're wondering why there's no communication, so your mind starts wondering. I'm talking about your spouse, and then they start worrying because they were thinking, okay, well, I'll get a message or a call at 6 o'clock, but you've had to recover a buffalo that's taken 3 hours that night or 4 hours that night, and you've got a 2-hour drive back. So you only get in at 10 o'clock at night and they still haven't heard from you. Now they're wondering why they haven't heard from you.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why I keep reiterating, if it's no news, it's good news.
Yeah, we use the same saying when I was in the Marine Corps and when I was deploying and things. Yeah. Well, when I was deploying with the government, as a civilian, we had contact, right? And yeah. And here, it's actually been more difficult here, because I almost always had my phone with me, even when I was out on a mission.
Yeah.
But here, there's only reception at the lodge.
Yeah.
So it's, I can talk to you for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah.
Everything in between, I'm not available.
Exactly. And I've noticed that, like now, you know, usually when I come to the States, I'm communicating, well, when the hours are right, constantly. Yeah, there's only communication at the lodge. And actually, I don't even know if there's communication in our room at the moment. I don't think the Wi-Fi is working at the moment.
It should.
Yeah, well, it hasn't been. So.
Oh, well, okay.
So also, like, when you get into your bedroom late and you've realized that you haven't messaged, now you've got to get out of your bed. And so, yeah, our communication hasn't been amazing. But I also know that the kids have been going to school, you know, started school this week. So they've had a hectic week as well. So there hasn't been too worry about the communication side.
Yeah, they're busy.
But when I get back tomorrow, I'm sure it's going to be all out again.
Yeah. Late nights. Yeah. We were working all night.
Yeah.
We're shooting night ops.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Cool. Thanks, man. Thanks for coming on and giving me your 2 cents. This was fun.
My pleasure.
I really hope you make it back out. I've had a great time working with you.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try and make a plan.
Good.
And I've enjoyed this, and surprisingly more so than I thought.
Yeah, I know. Although you super
need,
chill.
Yeah, you need to tweak the audio though. My voice sounds terrible.
Mine too. I hate the sound of my voice.
No, you got a radio voice. You're good.
Oh, no. I had a band in Baghdad for like 3 years. I could never listen to myself.
Well, don't worry about it, because I'm always listening for voices and stuff, for like narrations and stuff like that.
You've got the accent.
So you're
That's
fine.
All that matters. You could sound like Tickle Me Elmo. You've got the accent. You're totally fine. All right, man.
Yep. Yeah.